Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news-ad-free. That's amazon.com/news-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hello and welcome to Unheard, the channel that exists to challenge herd mentality and promote independent thinking wherever we can find it. I'm Freddie Sayers. So over the past year and a half of COVID-19 pandemic, of all of the somewhat strange and surprising heroes and villains that have come up, perhaps the most surprising is the Swedish state epidemiologist Anders Tegnell. He has been an epidemiologist and part of the health agency in Sweden for many years, and suddenly, because of his recommendation not to have a mandatory lockdown, not to close schools, he became, to some, an international hero, and to others, a villain. And that conversation has been fraught and heated for the past year and a half. We spoke to him last in July 2020, right at the early part of the pandemic, and his message then was, judge me in a year. He said we should catch up with him after summer 2021. And at that point, he felt he'd be able to say whether the Swedish policy had been a success or a failure. Well, true to his word, here he is. So the last time we spoke was in July 2020. Things were looking very good for Sweden at that moment. It was before the winter troubles. And you said, judge me in a year. So it's been a year and a couple of months, and here we are. What do you now feel the world should think about the Swedish policy? Has it been a success or has it been a failure?
I think over this year, I think most of us understood that question is very, very difficult to tangle out. If you compare Sweden to many other countries, we can see that different kind of measures have different effects in different countries at different times. It is a very complicated pandemic, and it's very complicated to completely understand what has worked well and what hasn't. I think the big change since we talked last time is really the vaccinations. And there we really found the tool that's going to make the difference. And all the other things we have tried is not going to be very important anymore, because reaching and achieving a high vaccination rate, which I think is the one way we can get out of this pandemic. There does not seem to be any other ways, really.
I feel like you might almost be being a little bit modest there, Anders, because the argument when we last spoke was really a fundamental one about whether this disease could be fully suppressed, contained. Zero COVID was the objective of a lot of countries and a lot of policymakers in Western countries. And it seems to me that since then, fewer and fewer people are arguing that, and it seems less and less possible, in which case something closer to the Swedish model maybe is the only route.
Yeah, no, that's definitely true. And I think we try to argue that from fairly early on, that this is the disease we have to learn to live with. And you're definitely right. More and more countries are taking that position, because even with a fantastic vaccine the way we have it, we can control it, but we cannot eradicate it. And I think that's the difference we need to understand and live with. And then we need to look at it in a different way. We have to accept, I think, a certain level of spread in the society. We probably have to accept there's going to be a few cases in our hospitals with COVID-19 in the foreseeable future, just like we are accepting a few cases of flu or a few cases of many diseases that we cannot control completely.
One other thing we've learned, you mentioned the vaccines, is that the very high hopes we had at the start of the year that they might put an end to transmission completely have not really happened. The new variants and so on mean that people are still transmitting even though they don't get seriously sick. Do you think that changes the argument about vaccination, about whether it should be mandatory, whether it becomes a sort of social duty? Do you think, has your view changed because of that?
Maybe partly, not really, because I think there's still a social duty to get vaccinated, because by getting vaccinated, you do diminish the spread quite a lot, even if you don't stop it. And you do protect the people that do not get the complete coverage or complete safety from the vaccines. So there is, I think, a society part of it still. But you are right. There is the aspect that the vaccines this time seems to be very, very efficient at stopping people from dying or getting seriously, but not as effective as we are used to vaccines being in stopping the spread of the disease. That means that we need to reach much higher vaccination levels. We need to be a lot more focused in our vaccinations to risk groups and things like that. So we need to handle these vaccines in a slightly different way. And we also need to have expectations in a different way. This is not going to be measles that we can basically eradicate with vaccines. This is a disease that we can control with a vaccine, but not more.
So at the end of this month, on the 29th of September, Sweden is going to pass its stage 4 of releasing restrictions, which means no limits on numbers in restaurants, private parties, concerts, those kinds of things, and no stay at home or work from home advice. What gives you the confidence to be able to do that?
I think several different things. I mean, this is the sort of last step down the ladder that we are taking now. We have taken this in steps, and we have watched the previous steps very carefully. Has not changed the spread very much, maybe a little bit sometimes. And we have, during this time, also increased our vaccination coverage to high levels. So we really do believe that we have sort of created a safety net we need to have in place to be able to do this. And the step is not that great. I mean, it's great for certain sectors of society, but on the whole, it's not a big difference to the way we used to live. So I think that there is no real reason to see that we have an enormous change in the transmission just because we take another step down the ladder that we really need to take to keep our society to stay functioning.
I mean, there's very little left by way of restrictions, aren't there? I mean, your neighbours in Scandinavia, Denmark, have almost declared the epidemic over. The legal position is that it's no longer a critical threat to the country. Do you have the same view? Is it no longer a critical threat in Sweden?
It definitely has the potential to be a critical threat again. So I think we have to be extremely vigilant. We have to really follow the development, and not least on the local level, so we find these outbreaks and really can contact trace and test people very quickly, so we don't get new big outbreaks in different parts of the country. And we do know that we have certain white spots on our vaccination maps with certain areas where the vaccination level is still not really up to the level it needs to be to contain this in a good manner.
I can hear that, and understandably, after the last year and a half, you are very cautious about making prognostications about what's going to happen in the future. But what is your sense of the coming winter? I mean, how big is the threat in Sweden, and what would a sort of worst case, best case scenario look like, do you think?
No, but I really do believe that we're going to have a much easier winter than last winter, because really 95-96% of the people that really got badly hurt last winter, they are now vaccinated and they have a good protection. And I think we have every reason to believe that that protection will last through the winter. There might be groups that need another shot. We have plenty of vaccine and resources around that we can give them that, so we can keep on protecting them if the need arises. So I think, yes, we're going to have a spread of the disease during the winter. We're definitely going to see a few cases that's going to need hospital care, but we know we're going to be near what we were like last winter. So it's going to be, I think, a time to understand and to learn what is COVID-19 going to be in the long run for society and for our healthcare, so that we can adapt to that in a good way.
I mean, I'm getting a tiny bit of deja vu, Anders, because when we spoke a year and 2 months ago, I also asked you about the winter. And you said then that you were optimistic because you thought immunity was more widely spread than in other countries, that Sweden would fare better in the winter. And that didn't happen. Sweden had relatively quite a serious epidemic in the winter. Do you feel that you got that wrong?
Yeah, I mean, the potential to spread was bigger than we expected. I agree on that. A lot of countries got a lot worse hit than we did. I mean, if you look on excess mortality, for example, Sweden did not fare very bad at all. I mean, we 4 or 5 from the bottom in the European Union. But there was definitely a need of a much higher level of immunity in the population that can only really be achieved by vaccination to control this disease in any reasonable manner. That's definitely true. And we didn't see that then, but we learned.
So you've just, I should say to our viewers, you've just moved because we were getting a sort of sunshine halo around you and you need to preserve the sunlight there. Thinking overall about the Swedish experience, do you feel that there are aspects of culture and of the broader life that were better preserved in Sweden than they were in countries in Europe that put lockdowns in place and had a more draconian policy?
It's always difficult to compare countries. I mean, we start from very different levels and so on. But of course, I mean, restaurant business, hotel business and so on could keep on running in Sweden. I mean, I know there are failures to a higher extent than in many other countries. That's for sure true.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
What that will mean in the long run, I think that remains to be seen, because now, I think it's only now that we really can understand the long-term effects. And probably we don't really understand them for another year or so on both public health in general and economy and other things. So it's a bit early to exactly say what this would, but sure, I think when you talk to Visita, who is the sort of organization that organizes restaurants and so on in Sweden, they are still reasonably happy over how they managed to handle the situation during the pandemic.
I guess I'm sort of asking about culture more. Do you feel that, you know, what is your analysis of why Sweden did take a different path? I know that that difference can be exaggerated, but fundamentally there was no mandatory lockdown, which there was in almost every other European country. Is that just a kind of to do with the fact that you were in charge and it was a technocracy decision, or is it something to do with the Swedish culture, do you think?
It's definitely something to do with our basic legal system for this kind of for communicable diseases, which very much builds on the responsibility on the individual to take care and not to infect other people. And I think it was out of that that many things could be done, because that was the tradition. It could be done voluntarily, and that people are really also listening to that, because there is a high level of both respect and trust between the population and the government and the agencies. And that's why we could get quite a lot of impact on doing things on a voluntary basis. I think that's one aspect. The other aspect is that the legal system we have in place forces us to focus on areas where we really can see that there is a high level of threat, so to speak, where there is a high risk of transmission. And that's why we moved into regulating restaurants very strongly and left other parts of the society more open, because we really could see, okay, it's in the restaurant, we see a lot, we don't see a lot of disease spread in young people playing football and things like that. And we definitely don't see a lot of spread in the schools. And I think that's another part of the reason why we could stay a little bit more open than other countries.
Is that one of the things you're most proud of, keeping the schools open?
Yeah, still. I mean, we know there has been problem, and when we ask Swedish children, they have definitely been affected by the pandemic, but to a lot lesser degree than children would have been if we had closed the schools. So I think that's the thing. And I think a lot of countries also have followed on that and managed also to follow on it, which I think is very good. And if you look at the global level, I mean, the United Nations and many others point to children's being out of school is maybe one of the main disasters that this pandemic has created.
You've been at the centre of the storm. Here in the UK, and I think certainly in America, it's become this huge political battle, and it's become really quite nasty over the past year and a half. Has it felt like that for you? Do you feel like when you're walking down the street, do you get people sort of doing thumbs up and then also people shouting abuse at you? What's your experience of how divided it's been as a policy?
I'm probably not the best to discuss politics and the different parties, but I think when I read different articles and so on, it has been reasonably peaceful in Sweden. We haven't had a huge divide like in the United States and other places on if you should put on a mask or not put on a mask, because the politicians have been fairly much in agreement with what we are doing, even if there is the usual criticism of the government, of course. I would say, when I look at my emails, they are different. I mean, some of them think we're doing stupid things. Many of them think it's fantastic what we're doing. Interestingly enough, when I walk in the streets, it's only thumbs up. And that's...
You haven't had any abuse?
No. Which is interesting. Maybe it shows something about Swedes being a bit not really liking confrontation very much. But reasonable amount of thumbs up, I would say.
So... Personally, were there moments during this? I mean, for example, the last winter when cases were climbing so rapidly, we had a man called Fredrik Elli on this program who said Sweden was facing disaster within 10 days and there was talk of hospitals needing help from Finland and all sorts of things. Were there moments when you thought, have I got this right? Do I need to change course?
Not really. And that's mainly because it's not really me. I mean, we're a group of people discussing this continuously. We also have a lot of contacts outside of the agency with other experts where we discuss this continuously. And I think we were fairly much in agreement that, yes, we didn't sit still. We kept on doing more and more things to try to stabilize things. And we saw that they had effect. Of course, we would have been much happier if we didn't see the high death toll and the crowded hospitals. But... we managed to keep it into some kind of reasonable level. And I think in the end, do understand that we did the best we could in the situation we had.
It looked from the outside that there was a moment when the government kind of took control more. And we saw less of Anders Tegnell, and the Prime Minister was there. This is when he was talking in quite serious language about how people should try to stay home and should not go to the gym and things. Did something happen around that winter time when the government took control?
I mean, from my and the agency's point of view, no, not really. we came into a situation where we needed to have measures in place that the agency didn't own anymore. So the government needed to step in and do those legal changes, the pandemic law and other things that were needed at that time, because the measures we had used earlier were just not enough during the fall. As you also said, the spread was much more rapid than we had thought. We really thought that the measures and the immunity we had in place would dampen it, but it didn't dampen it enough. So we needed more things in place, and that's where the government stepped in. So that was really nobody who really stepped over anybody else. This was done with a lot of dialogue and with a lot of agreement that now we need more people to step in to get the right effect. At the same time, we also moved the other way. We also managed to get the regions and the communities to step in and work a lot more, because we needed also to... people needed to hear this from a lot more voices than just from the agencies. And I think that was necessary at the stage, and we were all very happy with that, because it was needed.
So if we zoom out and think about this as you as an epidemiologist, as a scientist, what are you worried about in terms of people's attitude to future pandemics, future threats? Do you feel like the kind of basis of what is considered acceptable has now changed, and that, let's say, there's a serious influenza epidemic in 2 years' time, or a new COVID-23 or whatever, do you worry that the default will now be shut down society?
Yes, because I really hope that we can sit down and do some serious analysis of what we learned during this time, so we can really sort out what kind of things do you need to do in a certain time, in a certain context, in a certain areas, so we can get a bit more pinpointed to doing the exact things that have the most effect, that we don't need to do these blanket closing downs, because we don't really understand exactly what we need to close down to have the big effects. And I really hope we can have those discussions and have those analyses and see that we can move a bit further, so we don't need to do these drastic things as much as we did this time.
And so if there is such a threat in, let's say, 2 years' time, and if you're still the state epidemiologist, you will have the same attitude, which is no mandatory lockdowns, rely as much as possible on people's own sense of responsibility.
Yeah, and try to find out, where is the disease really a problem? Is it in the bars, in the pubs, in the restaurants, or a big event, so that we can really pinpoint our efforts to closing down the things that we really need to close down, so we don't need to close down everything.
Will it be you in 2 years or 4 years or 6 years? Have you had enough after this drama, or has it given you a taste for more?
I've had two pandemics. That's probably at least one too many.
But that doesn't mean you're going to resign, does it, Anders? We want to know if you're still going to be here next time.
Depends on when next time is up. I passed my, the age where people normally go into pension. So
I understand people even have tattoos of you in Sweden. Have you met these people with the Tegnell tattoo?
No.
Did you ever imagine that would be the part of the career of an epidemiologist?
No, and I certainly hope it's not going to happen again.
Anders Tegnell, thank you very much.
Thank you.
That was Anders Tegnell, the state epidemiologist of Sweden, and one of the biggest names to have come up during the course of this pandemic. I hope he wouldn't mind me observing that in his manner, perhaps we get a hint as to why Sweden took a different path. So measured, moderate, careful, unlikely to get overly heated, that perhaps gives even a better clue than anything he could tell us as to why Sweden took such a dramatically different path. I thought that was absolutely fascinating. So thanks to him, and thanks to you. This was Unheard.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.